Welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. We have now enjoyed one full week of practices. We're going to be kicking off preseason action tonight. We're actually going to get some real games under our belts here as fans. So it's a lot of fun. All of the stuff that came out of Media Day, all the talk that we've seen from the different tweets and the reports, you can kind of feel it. You can feel that energy with the team. You can definitely feel the energy in the fan base around Bulls Twitter, around Reddit, all those places. People are excited for Bulls basketball. So as we head into this first preseason game, I wanted to get perspective from somebody who's been covering the team the last week. Now, we've had Tony Gill on before. He delivered a rebuilding plan back in May for us in our first month of this podcast. And he's one of my favorite people at 670 The Score. The man's a jack of all trades. He's the executive producer of The Lawrence Holmes Show, which airs every weekday from noon to 2. He's the host of the No Zones podcast, which is a Bulls and NBA podcast for The Score. And he also covers the team for the station. One of the things I really enjoy about his coverage of the team is he records video during press conferences, before, after games, and even during some of the practices. So it's kind of neat. You get to see the player and coach reactions to some of the questions that are being asked. I think it adds a different layer to the way that the team's being covered. So I definitely enjoy the way he covers the team and talks about the Bulls and the NBA. And I definitely want to get his thoughts now as we head into the season. So let's bring him in. Tony, how you doing? Thanks for coming back on.
No problem, Matt. Anytime you need me to come on, it's all good, man. Enjoyed my last visit.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. This time, though, I'm excited because we're actually going to be, you know, previewing the team and talking about all the stuff heading into 2020. But before we get into everything that's gone on the last week, I wanted to quickly ask you about something since you cover the team regularly. For our listeners who don't know, the Cubs are starting their own network, and NBC Sports Chicago basically has a two-thirds partnership with the Reinsdorf family. Part of that new agreement is that all regular season games for the Bulls, Sox, and Blackhawks will be aired on the network. There's also going to be more programming and content associated with those teams. To help beef up Bulls content, NBC Sports Chicago brought in former Tribune reporter Casey Johnson to cover the team for both the network and website. So the landscape is sort of changing in terms of how fans are going to watch and read about the Bulls. So it's going to be sort of a one-stop shop to take in everything. And I wanted to ask you, Tony, with the Reinsdorfs having a heavier hand in the network, how do you think this changes the way fans are going to consume the Bulls? And do you think it could create a less balanced coverage of the team?
I think with the movement to kind of one network, it's making their coverage a little bit singular, where if you want the, you know, the official word of, you know, the team's perspective, this is where you're going to go. Everybody, you know, in this, you know, media industry now wants to get money for their product, and wants to benefit directly from their product. So you see the Cubs making this move and saying, hey, the Cubs are hot right now. We are a high priority consumption. Why should another entity get money for what we are producing, which is the main focus of the content? So, I mean, and that's going on throughout media in general. You saw Disney, they're making their own. They'll say, wait, we are at least the number one, you know, entertainment entity in the world. Why should you go to anywhere else for our content? You should go directly to us. And same thing that's happening with the Bulls, to a lesser, you know, kind of extent, going in and partner up with, you know, the Blackhawks, but putting all of their content into one singular partnership is the way big business is going right now, and specialization and exclusivity is what big businesses are thinking. We want to get as much money without any interference as possible, and that's what it all comes down to. Now, to answer part two, how does that, you know, affect the coverage of it? I don't know if it affects it too much, at least in the short term. It's not like they're saying, you know, only we can cover our teams. I mean, they're still allowing, you know, me and other entities to cover their team. The Athletic, with Darnell Mayberry, the Sun-Times, the Trib, they're still allowed to, you know, cover the team and stuff like that. Now, KC, who's already had, you know, that closeness to the organization and be able to get those reports first, he's already been doing that with Trib. I don't think that it'll change his coverage. KC is a great reporter, a fair reporter. And I think that's what they saw. Like, you know, KC, he has an excellent relationship with the organization, but KC will still call out, you know, the Bulls on things that he should call them out on. And I think that's fair. They must have threw a crazy, you know, amount of money and perks at him to pull him away from the Trib, because, I mean, KC was all right at the Trib. Mm-hmm. So that let me know, like, you know, NBC, they definitely weren't holding back. And I think, now this is an exclusive. I don't know when this is going to come out. But they're going to make another move that I think is going to surprise the Bulls fans, considering the next move that they're going to make in terms of coverage. So be on the lookout, you know, in a week or so, that they're going to make an announcement about another person coming in to help their Bulls coverage.
I think I know what you're hinting at. I had read some stuff recently. I won't say it, but I have heard some rumblings out there about a person that could be joining in terms of day-to-day coverage on the network. So I'm definitely looking forward to that announcement when it's official. I have a follow-up to this. Just, it's a bit different because I know the Bulls don't have partial ownership in the Score. They do air their games on your airwaves. And as someone who covers the team, you know, for the station, I wanted to get kind of your perspective. How do you balance everything? Because, you know, you specifically, you have to be an impartial reporter, and you're also bringing your own opinions to the air, to your podcast, No Zones. Is that difficult sometimes with the team being associated with a station like that, or not really?
Not really, actually. Again, it's all about, you know, money to the people that are higher up than me, you know? So I think it works into their benefit that they have, you know, someone as, you know, opinionated, you know, like me, you know, hosting a podcast, you know, on the network where, you know, they house the Score. I mean, ESPN, you know, has the same issues. They're partners with the NBA mm-hmm. and the ESPN, and they have, you know, a plethora of opinions regarding, you know, the sport, the fairness or the unfairness, where it benefits the companies both to have, you know, opinions on both sides of the spectrum, where you have the broadcast, which is obviously leaning team centric, but you also have the opinions outside of that individual broadcast to kind of give the full scope of the team. I know the saying goes, you know, all press is good press, and I believe that to a small degree. I haven't gotten, you know, any pushback or anything like that from my bosses on anything that I've said. Because I try to be fair, you know, but I also get it from a fan standpoint that there's frustration there. And mm-hmm. me being a person that's supposed to represent the fan, you know, in these forums and on my platform, that's what I have to do. And it's being honest and it's being real about, you know, the state of the Bulls, good or bad. And I just have to make that known. When I'm talking and speaking, that I'm not just a, you know, a figurehead or anything because I work for a company, is that no, I'm a representation of the fans that root for this team, and I need to express their concerns on the platform and ask questions and have those discussions fleshed out, because that way the fan feels like they have you know, a voice to these people. So yeah, I've never felt that pressure. If I ever feel that pressure, I would definitely speak out and say, hey, I've been getting pushback, you know, because of an opinion. You know, it's not like I can control what the team does, you know, on the court or anything like that. It's just an opinion. And if anybody has a problem with that, I mean, they can come see me, you know, if they have an issue. And then we can talk about it from, you know, from there. But, and if I'm in the wrong, I'm in the wrong. But But again, I haven't had any, you know, pushback for from anybody, and I definitely appreciate that room to operate.
Well, and I want to get into now some of the fun stuff, because of course you've been around the team the past week. It's been, you know, media day and the start of practices. And I wanted to get your thoughts. What do you think was the biggest takeaway from this year's media day?
I just did another podcast last night, and he asked me the same question, and I'm going to give the same answer. It's their obvious and open stance on making the playoffs this year. Starting with their opening statements, Jim Boylan kind of flat out said it, you know, pen to pad, we are looking for the playoffs this season. And I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad way to, you know, go about it, but if you're going to come out and say that, okay, now we have something, you know, the media and the fans have something to hold you to. We're holding you now to a playoff standard. And personally, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. I think it's too big of a step. I think the first step should be making sure these guys can last the full season, you know, see if they can do that first before, you know, a major playoff push. But they said it, and that was repeated with the players when they came out and spoke, that they're looking for the playoffs and they're looking to be a playoff team and everything comes with winning. So they're saying all the right stuff. But for me, that was kind of the biggest thing that I got from, you know, media day, was they're really adamant on making the playoffs this year.
In our last episode, I was talking about this exact same point, that in years past, we heard them bring up the terms player development, rebuild, patience. And this was the first time in 3 years that it seems like they have doubled down on getting to the postseason. I was really surprised they did that publicly, because wouldn't you try to hedge your bet on the potential of not making the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the wording of everything, I think, matters in this point. And I think you can come across as, we're going to play really hard. We're going to, you know, make that push, you know, to be a playoff team, no matter what seeding it is, versus, look, we are trying to make the playoffs, like, this season. Instead of coming out like that, you can kind of temper expectations with the wording. And that's, you know, what caught me off guard was like, wait, whoa, wait, what? You said you're going to do what? And knowing that, you know, this whole process has been they've been consistent, at least with this part of taking it step by step on everything that they were doing. I mean, when the rumors came out earlier this summer about the Bulls kind of going after Russell Westbrook, and I felt like, no, that's not normal growth. You don't go from being one of the worst teams in the NBA and then, oh yeah, we'll take, you know, Russell Wilson, then we're going to go for a championship run. That's not how natural progression goes for a team, especially a team with, you know, this reputation around the league and amongst players of, you know, not being, you know, 100%, you know, all in on winning at times. So you need to dispel those rumors by gradual growth. Getting that young, and Thomas Satoransky were excellent, you know, steps to get where you want to be. But now it's can my core guys stay healthy so they can play together? And then the new year after, can they make that playoff push? That was a huge thing. When you come out and make that statement, it's like, all right, bet. Let's see if you can hold yourself to that standard when it gets down to, you know, the nitty gritty of it. So that's, I mean, it's definitely something to be watchful for.
Yeah, it definitely feels like they're trying to go 0-60 pretty quickly. I mean, you won 22 games last year, and you're talking about maybe making an 18-19 game leap in terms of wins to get to the playoffs. You know, with the additions made this offseason to the young core of LaVine, Markkanen, and Carter, a lot of Bulls fans are excited. You add somebody, you even brought up Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, drafting Kobe White. What do you think, though, the expectations should be this year? And what do you think might be that big storyline heading into the season?
Well, the point guard competition will probably be, I mean, outside of health, You know, that's always going to be, you know, the number one story for this team is health. I mean, I think they haven't gone a day without somebody, you know, at least in training camp this week, without somebody being on the injured, you know, list or something like that. But health is number one. But after that, I think it's the point guard situation. As of right now, they don't have a starting point guard. They haven't figured that part out yet. But that's going to be the thing. Is Chris Dunn going to be here when the regular season starts? Where do you place Chris Dunn? You know, if he's not the starter, Coby White, he needs minutes. You need to figure out if he's your long-term solution at the point guard position in the future. Because if everything goes as how I think it's going to go in terms of the Bulls not making the playoffs, they're going to have a really good shot with the new flattened odds of being a lottery team again. And at least next year, they're going to be some decent point guards, like a decent crop of point guards, like franchise point guards out there to be had. And if you're in that lottery, you got to know if Coby can be that guy. Otherwise, you got to take one of them that can solidify that position. So I think from day one, I think Thomas Satoransky should be the starter. He just on paper, just fits a lot better with what the Bulls are going to do in terms of multi-ball handlers. A point guard that can play off the ball and still be, you know, guarded at the perimeter where Chris Dunn wasn't last year. Those are, you know, big issues that Chris Dunn had. So the point guard rotation and how Jim Boylan uses his point guard depth at this position, because it's not just those, you know, three. They also got Shaq Harrison, who they really, really like. And Ray Archie Diakono, who at times last year, the offense worked because he needed to be guarded at the three-point line. And, you know, he was a willing passer and wasn't necessarily looking for his shot all the time. So I'm pretty sure they want to work Archie in there, you know, at times. So that was the biggest storyline outside of health going into the season.
You brought up Chris Dunn. I want to stay there. You know, both Paxson and Boylan mentioned his hard work, and they said they expect him to have an impactful role role this year. Are you buying that, or do you think this is just an attempt to boost trade value?
Yes.
Well played.
Yeah, I think both things can be true, and certainly in this situation where, I mean, we saw last year when it seemed like, you know, Chris Dunn was going to be the starting point guard for the future. They had no problem calling him out where the rumors leaked out, where the Bulls weren't happy with how he was working, you know, in the offseason. But now, when it seems like you have some solutions to that position, it's, okay, let's try and boost his trade value a bit in the public. And the weird thing about that is when I asked the point guard question to Jim, to specify, you know, how is he going to deal with, you know, that amount of depth at that position that he has on this team right now, Jim came behind him and specifically went out of his way to point out, you know, how happy and proud they are of Chris Dunn, and, you know, he's coming to work and he's got that dog in him and stuff like that, which is like, hey, I mean, kudos to him, you know, for putting in the work. Which I think he has, and that he's taken a more mature approach to the situation. He had a side session with the media, not at the table like the other players, but he had a side one, kind of impromptu, where he was walking around doing his various things. And it seemed like he was very, very mature about the situation, that, you know, he's there to hard work, there to work hard. And just if he's still on the team, you know, be ready for any position that the coaches feel that is best served for the team. He seemed reserved to that. Now, this also could be, hey, he's being a team player, so teams aren't shying away from any trade talks from him. That could be it as well. But, yes, certainly I think it's a boost his trade value. But I also think Chris has changed his mental approach about, you know, the situation and just trying to be a good teammate for, you know, as long as he's here, until they come to that decision or come to that deal where he's gone.
You know, I guess my only concern as a Bulls fan is with Chris Dunn still here, it kind of creates this logjam and I think some issues minutes wise, where if you have him on the roster, where's Coby White's role with that second unit? Does it get hampered with Dunn sticking around?
And that's something that we just don't know just yet. We won't know until, you know, they start playing games on who has taken a step up, who has taken a step down, who does Jim Boylan believe in? Because it, as we said at the beginning, you know, they're trying to make that playoff push and they're trying to win. So that means that tells me that they're not really looking to be experimenting, you know, for the majority of this year as they have in years prior in this rebuild, because they're trying to win. And in order to know what Coby White has, you got to let him flesh out some of that stuff. Is he going to have a longer leash to figure his way out in this league? Like, I'm not saying he's Trae Young, but like Trae Young, who had the opportunity to just be, you know, manhandled at the league level in the first half of the season until he was able to figure it out in the second half of the season. If Atlanta, for example, was looking to win from day one, I don't know if Trae Young has the ability to work through all those issues, work through, you know, people out muscling him and figure his way out if he didn't have those opportunities. I don't know if Coby White is going to have those opportunities because of their opening statement of we're pushing for the playoffs. That's going to be something interesting to see through the season. Because, again, like I said, if they don't make the playoffs, they got to figure out if Coby White is the point guard of the future, or do they need to take another a point guard to solidify that position. So that's going to be one of the more interesting things coming out of training camp and into the regular season. How do they toe the line of giving Coby White necessary minutes to work out? Because he's going to be that bad. There's going to be times where he looks really bad. He's going to have, you know, eight turnover games, or, you know, shoot, you know, three of eight, you know, in games and have a lot of turnover. There's going to be games like that and stretches like that. But he needs to work through those. And I don't know if he's going to have those opportunities if they're trying to win.
So both Garpax and Jim Boylan, they mentioned a few times that they expect significant growth from Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. If you had a pick, which one do you think is more poised for a breakout year?
I think Zach. And it's strictly just based on its time, you know, for Zach. Heading into his sixth season, it's time for Zach to show if he's an all-star. He needs to be an all-star, and his play needs to affect winning. So because he's a bit more mature, a bit more the elder statesman of the core, he needs to show that. And I think he's probably more poised to have that breakout year to say, hey, if this is the year for Zach, if he can stay healthy, he needs to prove if he's going to be a staple for this team, or is he going to be a trading piece for the Bulls to bring in, you know, the bigger star. This is the year to prove it. And I think this will be the year to prove. Lauri, again, right now, can he stay healthy and just can he have consistent play is what I'm looking at. If he makes that, you know, that third year jump, that'd be great, because we're all looking for that's the year. That year three is the year to show, okay, I think he can do it. Maybe a few tweaks here and there. But we should be able to see if he's going to be that guy for this, a core piece, for this team, or is he going to be a trade, a piece for a larger, star later down the road. So, I think Zach is like just right there, because this is like nobody is like, oh, I don't know in year seven, you know? Like next year, nobody's like, I don't know about Zach LaVine in year seven. Like, no, it's year seven. We should know what the type of player he is. So Lauri, I think the third year, we should expect the third year jump of consistency on both ends of the floor, and just consistent in his availability for his team.
A couple more questions before I let you go. Aside from Zach and Lauri, who on the roster do you think has the potential for a breakout season?
It's a good question. Because, you know, it's a good question because nobody outside of those two, nobody really expects, quote unquote, breakout seasons, you know, from, I mean, do you expect Otto Porter to have? I mean, in his seventh season, have a breakout year, or Thad Young, you know, or
I guess instead of breakout, maybe a surprising season.
Surprising season. If I had to pick one, if Daniel Gafford stays healthy, I think he can show a lot of kind of Taj Gibson-esque energy, you know, from the bench. And I think a big reason is, one, he's a more mature player in his rookie season. He didn't come out, you know, after 1 year. And he knows what he's good at and knows what he's not good at. So he's going to give you 100% effort on the defensive end, you know, and running the floor on the offensive end, and doesn't need, you know, the ball in certain situations. If he stays healthy, I think fans are going to be surprised about what he can do on a basketball court. And I'm not saying he's going to be a star or anything like that, but he's going to give, when he comes in, and he'll play, because we don't know the health status of Wendell Carter Jr. I mean, they signed another big man, Simisola Chetu, yesterday. So that's another big man. So that leads me to concerns that, you know, Luke Kornet and Wendell Carter aren't necessarily ready, you know, to play, you know, full games, and they need some depth at the big man position. But if Daniel Gafford, again, if he stays healthy, I think the energy he provides, knowing what he's there to do when he gets in the game, and it's basically simplified for him. Hey, go play defense, go grab rebounds, and run the floor and catch alley-oops. And he can just be like, okay, coach, I got that. I mean, it's a fairly simple plan for him. And having a simplified plan for a rookie is great. It's great. I mean, it's across all sports, football, basketball. Just, hey, I just need you to do these couple things and go out there and give me the hardest, you know, 10 minutes that you can in this game. I think in that aspect, Daniel Gafford should be, you know, in terms of that question, a breakout season, I think that'll be him.
One thing that I've been asking a lot of people that have been coming on is this either or question. Who do you think is going to have the bigger impact on the roster this year? Otto Porter or Wendell Carter?
I'm going to go Otto Porter, and here's why. I don't know if Wendell Carter is going to last the full season. These early injuries, and yeah, they're kind of nitpicky and injuries happen. But I mean, the offseason surgery scared me. He came out and said that he, you know, didn't really need the surgery, but no doctor is going to cut you open if you don't need it, you know? That definitely concerned me. And he looked good, you know, physically, you know, at media day. It looked like he gained some muscle, which was good. That was something that Jim Boylan harped on, you know, his opening statement about Wendell Carter. But Otto Porter, I mean, he's basically playing for a contract going into his seventh season this year. I think he'll have more of the effect. And we saw that early on last season. I mean, everybody played better when he was on the court because he's a floor spacer, because he can do a little bit of everything on the offensive end, and he's very switchable on the defensive end. So if he can stay healthy, I think he'll definitely have a larger impact than Wendell Carter. And just because I think he's going to be the healthier body for this team. I don't know about Wendell Carter Jr.'s availability, you know, throughout the season just yet, because things just keep popping up.
I'm going to throw one more question out to you. So a lot's been made about the additions of Chris Fleming and Roy Rogers to the coaching staff. And it does appear, like, based off what Jim Boylan was saying at Media Day, that he wants to go up-tempo. He wants multiple ball handlers. The roster seems to have those pieces to make it work. Do you think Boylan has what it takes to really put it all together and make it work?
Can I say I don't know?
Absolutely.
Let me say this first. I do like the acquisitions of Roy Rogers and Chris Fleming. Those were excellent pickups by the Bulls front office to key those assistants and make sure they got them in. One, because we've seen their successes and they're impacted on their teams before they got here. Roy Rogers, we saw the boost in Clint Capella. And if Wendell Carter can have that same type of effect, and I think Wendell Carter is a better talent and Clint Capela, that will be excellent, you know, for this team and worth that, you know, the pick, the seventh pick that they spent, you know, on him. Even though personally, I thought they should have taken, you know, Michael Porter Jr., but that's another conversation. But the acquisition of Chris Fleming really showed me that, at least in part, Jim knew his weaknesses on the offensive end. And Chris can certainly, if he's allowed to, he can be, I mean, Jim talks about he wanted assistants that can teach and teach well. And from Chris Fleming's and Roy Rogers, you know, background, they seem like they get guys to learn what they're teaching. Chris Fleming specifically, I already talked about Roy Rogers and what he's done in Houston. Look at Brooklyn. Look at Denver, how those offenses ran, how in Brooklyn you had, you know, Chris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, just random dudes just out there performing because of the offensive situation that they were put in the pick and roll. And we saw what D'Angelo Russell was able to do with that system. And then you look at Denver, we look at Jamal Murray and the Joker out there in Denver and see what they've done with the pick and roll and how their offense has propelled. Now, I'm not saying the Bulls have those types of talents, you know, D'Angelo Russell and Jamal Murray, those guys out there, but they do have the archetypes of those guys in those places to absolutely have the offense look more modern and up-tempo and multi-ball handlers. So they do have those pieces on the roster. I'm not saying they're as good as those pieces, but they do have the archetypes of those pieces to be able to run a modern offense. And I'm very excited about the potential of what this team could look like because of the acquisitions of Chris Fleming and Roy Rogers.
You're right. They do have those archetypes. Like you look at Coby White, 6'6", you know, a longer point guard. Tomas Satoransky can play three positions on the floor. You have even, you know, Chris Dunn is what, 6'4", 6'5", and he's lengthy. It just seems like they have those types of pieces. And even Zach, to an extent, can handle the ball. It does seem like they have the pieces to make it go.
Yeah, and if you can put those pieces in the proper positions, they can win a lot of games. I'm not saying, you know, 40 games, you know, 50 games, but certainly a lot more than that they won last year, and it'll look better. They will look more up to date. They won't look stoic like they did at times last year because Jim wanted to slow it all the way down to a halt, you know, in their offense. And guys appreciate that. Players appreciate that. You see what I mean? Nobody can tell you what it feels like to play, you know, against one of these regular up-tempo offenses like the players can. And they look at that and like, man, they seem fun. They're getting up and down the court, showing off their athleticism, getting open shots and things like that. It's like, why can't we do that? And when you implement that, say, guys, we're going to do this stuff. Let's do it. Let's run it. Let's go. Players appreciate, you know, that aspect too. And that gives more trust in the head coaching and what he's trying to do. And it just works. In cohesion. So in a perfect world, in a perfect situation, again, with the archetypes that they have, similar to Denver and Brooklyn, offensively, yeah, I think if it works, it's going to be fun to watch if they can get that done.
Before we wrap this up, please let everyone know where they can follow you on Twitter and where to find No Zones.
All right, guys, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TonyGill670. I share videos of press conferences and interviews with players on there. You get my thoughts, crazy as they may be sometimes, but I'm always looking to have a good time so to engage with you guys. And also, you can find No Zones everywhere, I think, except for Spotify, because I think they're a radio.com competitor. But anywhere else, Apple, the radio.com app, 670score.com. You can find me and No Zones. And an added thing that we're doing this year with No Zones is we're going to be recording live right after home games, right there from the stadium. So you're going to get reaction and sound from Boylan and the players like, you know, an hour or so after the game, so you can have it if it's a big game right there after the game at night. Or if you want to save and wait for the next morning, it'll be right there for you. So that's going to be an added bonus for listening to No Zones. And also, I'm going to get the fans a little bit more involved and, you know, in terms of, you know, maybe joining on the podcast with me to ask questions and stuff like that. So we're going to do a lot more fun stuff on No Zones this season. And I'm just looking forward to it.
Awesome. Look forward to following you and listening to the podcast this year. And thanks, as always, for coming on, Tony.
No problem, Matt. Anytime, just reach out and we can do this again.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.